The pack remained close, and on the 21st a heavy swell made the situation dangerous. The ship bumped heavily that night, and fenders were of little avail. With each send of the swell, the ship would bang her bows on the floe ahead, then bounce back and smash into another floe across her sternpost. This floe, about 6 feet thick and 100 feet across, was eventually split and smashed by the impacts. The pack was jammed close on the 23rd, when the noon latitude was 64 degrees 36 and a half minutes south. The next change was for the worse. The pack loosened on the night of the 25th, and a heavy northwest swell caused the ship to bump heavily. This state of affairs recurred at intervals in succeeding days. The battering and ramming of the floes increased in the early hours of February 29th, until it seemed as if some sharp floe or jagged underfoot must go through the ship's hull. At 6 a.m. we converted a large coir spring into a fender and slipped it under the port quarter, where a pressured floe with 20 to 30 feet underfoot was threatening to knock the propeller and sternpost off altogether. At 9 a.m., after pumping ship, the engineer reported a leak in the way of the propeller shaft aft near the sternpost on the port side. The carpenter cut part of the lining and filled the space between the timbers with Stockholm tar, cement, and oakum. He could not get at the actual leak, but his makeshift made a little difference. I am anxious about the propeller. This pack is a dangerous place for a ship now. It seems miraculous that the old ship still floats. The ice opened out a little on March 1st. It was imperative to get the ship out of her dangerous situation quickly, as winter was approaching, and Stenhouse therefore ordered steam to be raised. Next morning he had the spanker gaff rigged over the stern for use as a temporary rudder while in the heavy pack. Steam had been raised to working pressure at 5:15 p.m. on the 2nd, and the Aurora began to work ahead to the westward. Progress was very slow owing to heavy floes and deep underfoots, which necessitated frequent stoppages of the engines. Open water was in sight to the north and northwest the next morning, after a restless night spent among the rocking floes. But progress was very slow. The Aurora went to leeward under the influence of a west-southwest breeze, and steering by means of the yards and a warp anchor was a ticklish business. The ship came to a full stop among heavy floes before noon on the 3rd, and 3 hours later, after vain attempts to warp ahead by means of ice anchors, Stenhouse had the fires partially drawn to save coal and banked. No advance was made on March 4th and 5th. A moderate gale from the east-northeast closed the ice and set it in motion, and the Aurora, with banked fires, rolled and bumped heavily. 17 bergs were in sight, and one of them was working southwards into the pack and threatening to approach the ship. During the night, the engines were turned repeatedly by the action of ice on the propeller blades. "All theories about the swell being non-existent in the pack are false," wrote the anxious master. "Here we are with a suggestion only of open water sky and the ship rolling her scuppers under and sitting down bodily on the floes." The ice opened when the wind moderated, and on the afternoon of the 6th the Aurora moved northward again. Without a rudder, no jury rudder can yet be used among these swirling, rolling floes, the ship requires a lot of attention. Her head must be pointed between floes by means of ice anchors and warps, or by mooring to a floe and steaming round it. We kept a fairly good course between two bergs to our northward and made about 5 miles northing till, darkness coming on, the men could no longer venture on the floes with safety to fix the anchors. The next 3 days were full of anxiety. The Aurora was held by the ice and subjected to severe buffeting, while two bergs approached from the north. On the morning of the 10th, the nearest berg was within 3 cables of the ship. But the pack had opened, and by 9:30 a.m. the ship was out of the danger zone and headed north-northeast. The pack continued to open during the afternoon, and the Aurora passed through wide stretches of small, loose floes and brash. Progress was good until darkness made a stop necessary. The next morning the pack was denser. Stenhouse shipped a preventer jury rudder, the weighted spanker gaff, but could not get steerage way. Broad leads were sighted to the northwest in the afternoon, and the ship got within a quarter of a mile of the nearest lead before being held up by heavy pack. She again bumped severely during the night, and the watch stood by with fenders to ease the more dangerous blows. Early next morning Stenhouse lowered a jury rudder with steering pennants to drag through the water and moved north to northwest through heavy pack. He made 16 miles that day on an erratic course, and then spent an anxious night with the ship setting back into the pack and being pounded heavily. Attempts to work forward to an open lead on the morning of the 13th were unsuccessful. Early in the afternoon, a little progress was made, with all hands standing by to fend off high ice, and at 4:50 p.m. the Aurora cleared the main pack. An hour was spent shipping the jury rudder under the counter, and then the ship moved slowly northward. There was pack still ahead, and the bergs and growlers were a constant menace in the hours of darkness. Some anxious work remained to be done, since bergs and scattered ice extended in all directions. But at 2 p.m. on March 14th, the Aurora cleared the last belt of pack in latitude 62 degrees 27.5 minutes south, longitude 157 degrees 32 minutes east. "We spliced the main brace," says Stenhouse, "and blew three blasts of farewell to the pack with the whistle." The Aurora was not at the end of her troubles, but the voyage up to New Zealand need not be described in detail. Any attempt to reach McMurdo Sound was now out of the question. Stenhouse had a battered, rudderless ship with only a few tons of coal left in the bunkers, and he struggled northward in heavy weather against persistent adverse winds and head seas. The jury rudder needed constant nursing, and the shortage of coal made it impossible to get the best service from the engines. There were times when the ship could make no progress and fell about helplessly in a confused swell or lay hove to amid mountainous seas. She was short-handed, and one or two of the men were creating additional difficulties. But Stenhouse displayed throughout fine seamanship and dogged perseverance. He accomplished successfully one of the most difficult voyages on record, in an ocean area notoriously stormy and treacherous. On March 23rd, he established wireless communication with Bluff Station, New Zealand, and the next day was in touch with Wellington and Hobart. The naval officer in New Zealand waters offered assistance, and eventually it was arranged that the Otago Harbour Board's tug Plucky should meet the Aurora outside Port Chalmers. There were still bad days to be endured. The jury rudder partially carried away and had to be unshipped in a heavy sea. Stenhouse carried on, and in the early morning of April 2nd, the Aurora picked up the tug and was taken in tow. She reached Port Chalmers the following morning and was welcomed with the warm hospitality that New Zealand has always shown towards Antarctic explorers.